The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my SparkFile. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my SparkFile. I jump into my SparkFile. Let's open up the SparkFile.
Hey, welcome to the SparkFile, your middle school talent show for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're joining us for the first time, you are so welcome. You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a SparkFile? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are good questions, y'all. We've got answers.
A SparkFile is a place where you consistently collect all of your inspirations and fascinations. And if you're like us and you're making stuff all the time, you know that sometimes the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry. We're here to refill it.
Mm-hmm. We're on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity. Things that inspire us to rise up off of our asses and make things like this podcast.
Or a comedy show that helps us to understand current events while somehow making us want to laugh instead of cry.
Or a children's book that celebrates love is love is love is love is love is love is love between two bunnies.
Or another children's book about how it feels when someone new comes knocking at your door.
Or a play featuring nine character actresses who don't have to sing or dance. Sign us up.
Yes. On today's Makersode, we're going to talk with someone who truly sparks us.
And that special someone is Jill Twist.
Jill!
Welcome to
the SparkFile.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
God damn, yay! That's a long intro.
It's a long, long intro.
I can just see our guests, their like, eyes just crossing as they're like, when does it stop?
Well, then there's a realization of like, oh, wait, I recognize these things.
Wait a minute. I wrote a book
about that very thing you just mentioned.
That's crazy.
That's you.
Jill, you know that there is a tiny, tiny price of admission to get into the SparkFile. And that price is that you have to share with us a creative risk that you have taken recently. You okay. Got something?
I do. Actually, I think the creative risk is actually telling you about it. Saying it out loud means I'm actually going to do it. My friend Taylor Ferreira and I have...
Hi, Taylor. Hi, Taylor.
She's the best. Have invented. We think we've invented something we call the Duringquel. Which is, you know what a sequel is,
yeah.
Which goes after, yes. You know what a prequel is, it goes before. We are writing musicals that go on during other musicals.
Oh my God.
So we have currently written 7 songs that go on during the musical Annie. And we are now deciding that we're, I know it's super weird, we're going to make a podcast. A Duringquel. In Annie, you know that, yeah. Like, FDR is singing Tomorrow and, like, yeah. Helping Annie find her parents. But, like, we wrote a song for Eleanor Roosevelt who was like, hey, you know, Hitler was just chosen as chancellor. You might want to focus a little more on that and maybe less on, like, one orphan and her dead or not dead parents. So, anyway, it's a very weird idea. It's what we're doing. We just started doing it. Suddenly we realized we'd written a whole bunch of songs.
My God. And did somewhere in there you said, and so it will be in the form of a podcast. We can hear the Duringquels.
Yes, we are. We wrote all of it before we really figured out what form it was. We were just writing songs.
Yeah, that's great.
But that seems to be the form that it will be.
Holy crap.
I just want to double click and expand on that for just a second. Did you hear Jill Twist just say that you were just writing because you were sparked by it? You and Taylor, it was coming to you writing it. And even when you weren't sure what that final form would take, you just kept on writing, and it may be a podcast, it may be
could be a live show, could be a live show at some point, but it will be people that are not me singing these songs.
Oh my
but it
God.
Could be people that are you Because you could, if you chose to, because you have the skills to pay the bills, but you're saying that hard pass.
I'm saying that it is so nice to have admitted to myself that I'm a writer and stop going into musical theater auditions.
Okay. We're going to talk about it. We're going to get into it. We're going to get
Incredible.
Into it. I believe that you have been fully admitted into the Spark
That's
file.
That's correct.
Jill,
you're in.
For people
you're
who in. Don't know you, how do you identify creatively?
I guess as a comedy writer, that although it took me, I would say, 3 years into making my entire living as a comedy writer before I would say that.
Wow.
Oh.
But now you're like, I'm owning it. I'm loud.
I must
I'm proud.
Be.
Yeah.
I must be.
Yeah. I was going to ask, was there a moment that you recall being like, I guess this is what I'm doing.
I'm just going to say
I am this. Or you're still in that zone of like,
It still feels a little bit like a lie, only because I don't know why, actually. It does only because I hold it up to like such a high like reverence, like yep. the people that I think of as like amazing comedy writers. But factually, I don't think anyone could say that I am not doing that, since
I think you've got the receipts for that.
And the writing awards are the receipts. Yeah, I think you're okay.
And just and the plus hours the checks that come and hours and the, of writing and the pages and pages of writing.
We've got evidence. We've got evidence that we can point to.
What would you say that you are most well known for creatively?
I guess, well, I'm a writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. But I guess personally, the thing people know most about that I did more individually was a children's book called A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo.
You don't say.
Yeah.
And that's a project that sort of grew out of your work on Last Week Tonight.
Yes. Yeah. It was released by the show. I pitched it to the show. Weirdly, I had a strange... If you don't know, Marlon Bundo is an actual bunny that is owned by Mike Pence, and he and I don't agree on a lot of things, but one thing we agree on is, like, that's a really good bunny, and it's a really good bunny name, and I became really, like, weirdly obsessed with that bunny, and then I found out that the Pences were going to write a book, and I got really territorial. I went, like, in my head, I was like, no, that's my story to write, which
I'm
is insane,
that book.
Objectively, because it is their bunny. They had far more right to it. But I pitched it to the show, and John said, okay, write it. And I did.
Amazing. That alone, is that unusual? Like, has the show ever put out a book, or a children's book in particular?
No, but I feel like every year we do things we've never done.
Yes.
This year we did a musical, like a big fat musical number in Times Square, which was so fun and cool. So I think they're very open to trying a new thing.
Let's just talk about that musical number for just a moment. I am a big fan of the show, and that, I don't know, these times, I'm just saying what everybody knows, these times are very fraught. But there's something about your show that does that magic trick where you do find a way to teach us about current events and make us laugh instead of cry. That fucking musical number, Eat Shit, Bob.
That was the title of the musical number. If you have to Google it, go on YouTube and if you look for Eat Shit, Bob.
But it's really important to watch the story that leads into it.
Yes.
Get your learn on. It's fascinating. And then that musical number, a lot of things, when I watch them, they don't actually make me LOL. Like, I just, I take them in.
Smile.
I might get a little lift at the corners of my mouth.
Like, that was
I could
humorous.
Not believe what I was seeing. And I could not stop laughing. And then I dragged my husband into the room and was like, now you sit down and you take it. It's so goddamn funny.
For the people listening, can you give a little description of it? Besides how funny it was, tell us.
Sure. And keep in mind, this was not my piece. So this is not.
Sorry,
like,
sorry to make this not about you, Jill Twist.
No, it very much does. I just don't want to take credit for other people's work.
I
did some work on the song, but that's all. But we, a couple years ago, wrote a piece on coal, and one of the coal magnates, Bob Murray, did not like what we said.
Yeah.
And he told us he was going to sue us if we said it. So we said it more, I think. And he did sue us. And it took years and you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. All of this is discussed in the piece.
In the piece.
Again,
yes.
I did not write.
Yeah.
And HBO had to get lawyers, and it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. But of course, we won because we didn't say any lies about this man.
Yeah.
And we celebrated the end of that by talking a bit about the lawsuit and then writing a song to him, the premise of which is just all of the horrible things that we're going to say he did because we're mad at him.
And it's all covered.
He obviously did none of those things.
But it's all covered by protected speech, correct?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It was. And by the way, if Bob Murray, if you listen to this, please don't sue me.
No, no, no. It's jokes. It's just jokes.
It's
jokes.
Of course.
It's jokes.
No,
but that's one of the reasons it's so funny. It's so increasingly ludicrous.
Yeah.
It's jokes stacked on jokes. And then just somebody comes in with another
pile
of jokes with jokes falling off the top of the stack. Like it's so good. I feel like it's just like a beautiful example of the work that you all do.
I will pass it on. We were so lucky. Every single department did their very best work, and it was so much cooler than
anything
I could have
imagined.
That's
really beautifully put. Every single department like delivers on that piece across the board. It's quite amazing.
I'm still marveling at what you said that you know, that you're working in a place where you do new things every year, you said, but you're like allowed to and encouraged to just pitch the most off the wall thing. Like, we've never done this before, but here's an idea.
Yeah. And mostly they say no. I mean, like, mostly just like everything else in this industry, like, you pitch 100 things for the one they do. But like, I got to write a book because I pitched a bunch of other things that they didn't do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I think that's a lovely thing about it. And it's just fun to be able to dream big. And at first I didn't dream very big because I didn't understand HBO money at all. And
just the amount of support you have here.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It just resources. Didn't occur to me like that there's TV money and I'm no longer like in the theater trying to like, you know, put on overalls and be like, I'm a squirrel or whatever.
That's
like,
right.
We could actually,
there's
could
TV actually money, be there's a full snack bar in the kitchen over there. It's great. It's great.
Can you tell us a little bit about your origin story? Like, we want to know, how did you become funny? And when were you aware that you were funny?
I grew up all over. My dad worked for the Forest Service.
You're kidding.
No. When I was born, he was a smoke jumper. He jumped out of airplanes into fires.
Wow.
You're kidding. And then, I am not kidding.
That's a badass job.
And so he would get promoted and I would move.
Would get promoted to jumping into bigger
fires. Yeah, it was just jumping from higher up into bigger fires. It's weird. I don't think it was helpful.
It sounds terrible.
Wow.
Sounds just terrible.
And it meant that you moved.
It meant that I moved all the time. So in the like 12 years that would be kindergarten through high school, I went to 11 schools. So that's including like the skip from like junior high to high school or whatever too. And I lived mostly in places where there were not people, there were forests. So like I went to kindergarten in a one room school in Idaho. It was kindergarten through eighth grade in one room.
Oh my gosh.
In Idaho at the time, I don't know if this is still true, you didn't have to go to high school because there were places that they just couldn't afford a high school. But we moved and I did go to high school. I'll have you know. but if I had a theory as to why I'm funny, I think it's just because I was always on the outside.
Yeah.
And I think that's like I wasn't made fun of. I don't have the thing where like people were especially mean to me. I got along well with people. I had friends. But I was never not on the outside. And I was always like every place going in going like, oh, we have like a new vocabulary here. We have a new set of accents. Like I live in Minnesota now. We talk different. And I could like fit in, but I think I was always seeing what was weird about things in a way that you probably wouldn't see. And I think that's one way that people find comedy is by being on yeah. the outside of things. It's a little easier to see why things are weird.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Your perception skills, like immediately, like I need to assess the situation. Who's who? What's what?
Right.
You know,
what are the rules here?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do
oh,
we
this
do?
Is what
and
we're
also,
doing here
yeah,
now.
Why is
yeah.
this weird? Like I still go into like a football stadium and I'll be like, why would they do the wave? And everyone else is like, that's just what we do. It's so fun. But I'm still like, that's so strange. Why are they all doing this together? It's just, I think, years of never quite being on the inside because I moved all the time.
Yeah.
How fascinating.
And then how did that shape itself into working like as a writer and then getting here to Last Week Tonight?
I was a clarinet major in college because I'm practical.
Your mouth. A clarinet major?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I was a music major, but the focus yeah. was on clarinet.
You were a clarinet major.
I was a clarinet major.
BFA in clarinet.
Juilliard. No, I wasn't. I went to William & Mary.
Still a very good school.
I spent my summers interning in Congress, and then I thought I was going to go to law school. And literally the day before I had to decide if I was going to law school or not, I saw this poster that said touring children's theater. And I went like, maybe I'll do that instead because I didn't know you could audition and not get cast.
You just thought everyone who shows up today, yeah, we're all doing this
everybody
together.
Everybody gets a part.
They
you're the squirrel.
Some people
you're the tree.
To do this for a couple years.
Wow. Wait, I feel like I blinked for 1 second yeah. about a minute ago.
We thought we heard you
and
say.
And we were like, major clarinet. What Congress?
Interning
I'm sorry,
in
what
Congress?
Just happened?
I think that I look back now and I think I just thought college was where you went to do like the thing that you were into at the yeah. time. And never yeah. really, and my parents never told me like get a practical major or do. So I had yeah. no mm-hmm. version of that to do. So I was like, well, what classes do I want to take the most of? And I almost had an economics major too. And then I like, took one class and I hated it. And I thought like, well, I don't need this one then,
mm-hmm.
I
okay,
guess.
Clarinet.
It just
okay.
never occurred to me to be practical in that way. I just yeah. thought like you go to college and you take classes in the things that you want. And then I also was very into politics. I just happened to not like the classes that much. So
but
in
like-
the summers, I thought that I wanted to work in Congress uh-huh. after college. But then I slowly realized, like, that's not how you become a congressman. Like, you don't graduate up from being, like, the person who writes letters to constituents. And then you get to, like, be the senator when he dies. That's
right.
just not true.
It's
so
not
I was like, well,
works.
Then I'm not that interested.
Were your parents political?
No.
Where did this interest come from?
I don't know. When I was like 5, I said I wanted to be the president. And I think I just like said it and then made it like true in my head for a while. I don't even know. I now
it's
obviously
not a bad
like,
idea.
The background has helped me in this particular job. It's
no
like
kidding.
Something I'm
yeah.
super interested in, but I have no idea why or how I got there.
Were you keyed in, you know, you said that when you were 5, but then throughout your growth, were you keyed into what was happening in politics and?
Sort of, but not really. I look back at what I did and it was less like I was never like in the Young Democrats or the Young Republicans mm-hmm. or anything like that. It's more that I would like write a letter to the governor with a plan. we found like letters.
This is amazing.
I got back. It's just, I think a lot of what has gone very well in my life has been just being completely delusional in a lot of ways and just going like, I don't know, I have an idea for the governor. Why don't I write him a letter? Why don't I like,
it?
There's a poster for children's theater. I guess I'll go tour for a year.
What was your idea for the governor, by the by?
Oh, it was such a bad one. I'm ashamed. I thought I like saw a news report that they had prison overcrowding problems.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have an idea. Like you could just set them in like the beds into 8-hour schedules. So you could have 3 different people that had the bed every 8 hours. And then this is horrible. This is torture. It's not a good idea. But I was just like, math wise, then like,
yeah, the ACLU would shut you down.
That's
but
right.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible idea.
But how old were you?
I was like 7.
I think that's okay. amazing that a 7-year-old would see something about prison overcrowding and
yeah.
give enough of a shit to write a letter to their
yeah.
governor.
To even put that much thought into
I'd
it.
I'd be thrilled that you
think
were
like,
engaged.
Let me see if I can solve this.
You told me what the problem is and I have a solution. I have thought no further than that.
I'm happy to share it with you.
Yeah, here. I'm sure you as the governor have never thought of this and you might be interested in my input.
But now, can you take us back to, you see the poster for the children's theater, you think, oh, great, we're all, everyone gets to go. Right. But you actually did get
but
to
I
go.
But I did a go audition, tell us and I went on tour. I hated it. Oh, it was horrible. Like, touring children's theater, God bless those people.
Were you, like, driving in a van with the sets?
Five people in a van.
And setting them up and doing the show, yeah. Breaking them down?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what the show was?
Oh, boy, do I ever.
And how?
I got to tour with Ready, Aim, Recycle. And yes, I did get to rap. Thank you very much for asking.
Ready, Aim, Recycle, and rap.
I was an 8-year-old girl who would not clean her room. Which very on the nose. Very for me. Yeah, it was delightful. Okay.
Do you remember any of that rap?
Oh, I knew you were going to do that.
Everybody calm down. Let's get clean room tone.
Okay, I can't remember. I remember the song was like, ready, aim, recycle. It's what we have to do. Get ready, because the only world we have belongs to me and you. And then I think the rap might have just been repeat, like, ready, aim, recycle, something.
Oh, it's just sort of a different orchestration of the same lyrics.
I think it is.
Punching them up a bit.
I wonder if that show is still touring.
All right, so you were like, this is not for me.
I wonder if that show had legs.
I mean,
still touring.
Yeah, I'm not saying it couldn't make it to Broadway.
not saying it.
Because they might have been on the cutting edge. How long ago was Ready, Aim, Recycle?
It was... Oh, I don't know. In the like early 2000s.
But it's interesting because it wasn't just Charlotte's Web. It actually did have some sort of like social issue component baked into it as well.
Oh, yeah.
That was the draw for you, probably.
No. No, I didn't know. I just auditioned and they toured like 20 shows.
Now, just to be clear, I know that you were getting your BFA in clarinet, but had you also had performance experience?
I would audition like for shows in high school and college and were in some, but I was never. It's odd because I was not particularly successful at non-professional theater. So I thought I would go right into professional theater and then
you're
move
going to
New
the
York
show,
City
baby.
And pursue it. I just think I just always figured, like, if you're going to try, just go all out. Give it your best shot. Work as hard as you can. And then if it doesn't work out, like, you'll be okay.
But it did work out. And nice. You continued performing, correct?
I am still in Ready, Aim, Recycle. It did. Well, it did work out in that I went, well, if I'm going to be an actor, I should move to New York. And try it at the biggest level and then I'll find out if that's what I'm good at or not. So I moved to New York and I worked.
Yeah.
But it was never, I was always like, I was a standardized test tutor through most of the time that I was an actor. And then I would go do like summer stock and regional theater.
And when you start off your career with Ready, Aim, Recycle, it's really hard to
meet
that. Where do you go from there?
Where do you go?
Yeah.
It's so true.
But you did go into writing, as it turns out, and a little show, not Ready, Aim, Recycle, but a little show called Last Week Tonight.
Yes. Was Last Week Tonight your first professional writing job?
Yes.
Oh my God.
You have got to suck my butt.
It was not by like a week, because there is a thing where you can, I did stand-up comedy for about 6 years until I realized.
So you were writing for yourself.
So I was writing for myself.
Yeah.
Right. But I realized that I was scared all the time and I was not happier when people clapped. And that was my way of going, maybe you're not.
Will you just
cut out for
slow
this?
Slow it down and say it one more time for the people that didn't catch it. You were doing stand-up comedy, but you realized 6 years.
Yeah.
Scared all the time. You weren't happier when the people clapped. And you were like, huh, I'm going to take a look at that.
Yeah, what is the part of this that I like? And every time the audience would like want to get involved, I'd be a little mad at them and be like, don't you know I've prepared all of this for you?
Hush,
sit there.
So then I started trying to get writing jobs, but it was years after that. And it's a helpful and crazy story how I did get hired at Last Week Tonight because... I was asking we're talking probably another 6 or 7 years that I couldn't even find out how you apply to a late night show. No one would tell me anything. I couldn't get an agent to read anything I did.
Were you acting at the time?
I was acting. I was tutoring.
Got it.
Like SATs and ACTs and LSATs and whatever. And just I think I was just doing all the things and seeing what was the thing that panned out.
Yeah.
And
you were how age-ish? 20s? In your 20s?
This was like late 20s to early 30s.
Great.
Wow. And I tutored a kid whose mother was a vice president for Worldwide Pants, which was David Letterman's organization. And he did really well on the SAT. So I asked her, I was like, would you ever like pass on a packet for me? And she said, I will. You don't want to work there, which now we all know makes a lot of sense.
Right.
She goes, but I will do that. And so I asked everyone I knew for a late night writer who could just read it over and make sure that I didn't sound like someone who had never written anything. There was a woman named Lori Kilmartin, who is a Conan writer, who read it for me. She emailed me back, said, this is really good. Send me something else. And I did. And she never spoke to me again for like 5 years. I'm not making this up. And I went like, I guess the second one wasn't good. But 5 years later, I got an email from a woman named Nell Scovell, who is a she created Sabrina the Teenage Witch. She wrote for Letterman. She wrote for The Simpsons. She said, have you ever wanted to write for TV? I've been looking at your Twitter. I went and I was asking women that I knew were good if they knew anyone that should be writing for TV. And this woman named Lori Kilmartin gave me your name.
Wow.
And said
5 years earlier.
Yeah. She just didn't have any way to help me until she did. And as soon as she had a way to help me, she did.
Wow.
And Nell was like, I can't get you a job, but I can get your stuff read.
Oh, boy.
So she told me about Last Week Tonight. Like, she told me they were taking packets. I wrote a packet. I now know that they read them all blind, meaning that they didn't have any names. They didn't have any resumes. They didn't know.
Yep.
I did a second packet for them. And it wasn't till the morning of my interview that they asked for a resume. And that was when they found out that I had never done any of this before.
Wow.
But by then, they were attached.
Yeah.
Oh,
so they had to hire me.
That is a fantastic story. For our creators who are listening who are not writers and they don't write comedy, could you just explain what a packet is?
Sure. Yes. Late night is different than pretty much every other area of television. Like narrative TV, you might write something entirely different. But for late night TV, you usually have to write a packet of the kinds of things they do on the show, usually specific to the show you're applying to. So for our show, you might do something that is a slightly longer form story with jokes in it about something. Whereas like for Jimmy Fallon, you might write a page of monologue jokes, and then you might write a bunch of ideas for desk pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, you're giving them a sample of what you would write for the show and how you can write for the voice of that specific host.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little mean in that you can't just use your same work for everything.
You have to do original work for all of it.
And even ours, for our second packet, it was specifically timed as well. Like, we had 48 hours to do it because they also needed to know if, you might be a great writer, but if it's going to take you 2.5 weeks to do the level of quality they need.
Do they tell you, like, an email is coming, you're going to get it at 10 a.m. on Monday morning, and everybody is sort of like, and go?
Essentially. I mean, I don't know what they do now, and I don't want to, like, speak on behalf of the show in that way, but because for me, I was doing it when there was no show.
That's the other question.
So everything
I have is like,
was kind of a giant guess.
Oh, yes. Wow. You're just sort of guessing because there's no way you've ever seen it.
Right. The process is a bit different now because, of course, they can give things that are very specific to the show. At the time, it was a little bit like, write something you think would be great for John. Because they didn't necessarily entirely know. So I now look back and go, oh, like, I can understand why I got hired because I did some really specific things that would have been very weird for any other host. Mm. But, like, I read a whole packet on South Sudan, and it's like, who does that? What a terrible idea. But it just so happened that it's like, well, actually, that's probably a pretty good fit.
I wanted to underscore that story about, what is her name? Laura?
Lori Kilmartin.
Lori Kilmartin, who is still a writer at Conan. Don't everyone send her email asking her for favors, please.
Yeah.
I feel terrible.
Yeah. I just wanted to underscore that because whether it be in the creative world or elsewhere, I think sometimes people assume the worst. If you haven't been on the other side of the desk with like 1,000 emails a day or 20 packets a minute to read, you don't realize that I believe truly 90% of the time when you don't hear back from people, it is because of time and all the other shit they're doing. It is not the story you're making up in your head that it's like, oh, my work sucked. I'll never hear from them again. And I just love this story because she was, in fact, remembering you for 5 years. She held your name in her mind. She followed you on Twitter. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I just want to say that to people because so many times people are like, well, I sent my resume like 3 days ago and I haven't heard anything.
I guess
we're done.
You just never know. And I mean, I believe so firmly in the just make everything you want to make and like see what pans out. There yes. are people who know was, exactly what they want to do, I was never that person.
I love that too. I'm glad that you sort of pulled that out because I do think there are times in different chapters and different seasons of our yes. lives where you're sort of like in that liminal space and you're like, what? And it could be when you're preparing to leave school. It could be when you've completed sort of an arc in a career and you're like, I've kind of done everything I want to do with that mm-hmm. or at a job. And then to sort of get back into playing around with all the things that are, I understand that we all have to pay our mortgages and we all have to like keep our financial commitments, but I do think there is something to, it can be really fucking scary, but to doing that, to just like experimenting with all the things that you gravitate towards.
Just make all the things you want to make
and yeah. see so what's simple. Sticky.
In retrospect, of course I go like, oh, how did you not know you were a writer? How did you think you were an actor?
But like,
I was acting for years. Could that have been the thing that panned out? Well, I could not have been a dancer, but there is a chance that I could have.
God, you're a dancer. A dancer dances, Jill.
A dancer does dance. I've heard that somewhere.
But here you are. We are huge fans of the show Last Week Tonight, and it is thrilling. I mean, I know for you it's just like another Sunday afternoon, but for us it is a thrill to be here.
You're here in the office, everybody.
Like you're upholding this really long-standing tradition of somehow managing to make these very intense topics funny enough to mm-hmm. to take in and to digest. We're curious, what is your personal process for sitting down and writing about intense topics like you do for the show?
I have spent much of the last 6 years trying to like find tricks.
Tips and tricks and hacks.
It's so because everything, I mean, I remember when I started, I would just be like, this is impossible. I can't keep writing jokes. I never drank coffee in my life till I got this job. And then I was like, maybe coffee will give me 2 more jokes. Like I will literally try whatever.
So
the big answer is like every single time I'm like, this isn't going to work out. This is the one where I get fired, where I am not able to come up with any. Absolutely. Almost every day. Because I have maybe, I would say I have 90 minutes of good writing in me a day. And then everything mm-hmm. else is like a trick and a lie to get one more thing out of me.
I feel like Memento, though. You need to get a tattoo in reverse that reflects in the mirror so that when you look right across your forehead, that's like, just like trust. Like you know, just to remind.
The jokes are on the way.
I have now gotten to the point where I know that I get to that point. So I can at least go like every other time worked out, it's going to be fine. And I'm okay.
Yeah.
But it's still a very real thing where it's like maybe we all have a finite number of jokes in our head and I've written all of mine, it turns out. But if you happen to be the kind of person who wants to write jokes, a lot of times when I'm stuck, I will set a timer for like 7 minutes and I'll just be like, write down all the things you know about this thing. And usually somewhere in the middle of this list of things that I know about it, something will come that's like a little weird or a little funny or that leads me to something or gets me somewhere. That's my biggest trick. And change locations. Like every time you feel like you can't do anything else, I switch couches in my apartment.
Then
I will go up to, I will go to coffee shops. I will go to my office. I will go just anywhere to be like,
fresh
I think it's
perspectives.
Yeah. In my head, I think that I'm like tricking my body into going, it's a new day.
Yeah.
Look, you're in a different place. This can't possibly be the same day.
Fresh start.
A new allotment of jokes. You must have new jokes in you.
But you also said that you know, like, full well that 98% of the stuff that you write isn't going to make it to air. Like, how do you psych yourself up to keep writing stuff knowing that only some of it is going to be see the light of day?
Right. That is not specific to our show. For TV.
That's
for
right.
sure. We were trying to figure out, we probably write 40 or 50 jokes for every joke that goes on the show. And it, some of it is you just get better at throwing out your own stuff. You just get used to it.
Yeah. Do you mean pitching or mean discarding when you say throwing out?
I mean having them not pick my stuff and going like, oh, okay, that one was not one that they picked. So some of that, but I also, it did help me to kind of go, hey, Jill, you're not rating this for the television show. You're rating it so that your boss, John, can have a fun time reading about this topic. So, like, if he gets some giggles all the way through, and then if coincidentally some of those words are also said on TV, great. But really, you're just paid to be, like, to write, like, a delightful piece so that your boss can read it and humorously learn about a topic he is interested in.
You know, this is an interesting shift of objective, and it reminds me of actors who shift their focus from, like, getting the job versus I'm going to go into the audition room and I'm going to try to accomplish one goal, such as I am going to see if make I can remain present and make a connection with the people in the room. That's the goal. Or do you know what I mean? It's like that one
that
shift.
That is such a good comparison.
That, say that again?
That's such a good comparison. Yeah. And something I could never do as an actor either. It was always like a horrifying
That's
thing.
What I need my memento tattoo in reverse so I look in the mirror and it's just like
one goal.
One simple goal right across my forehead.
Is there so something that you wrote that was like, that didn't see the light of day or to a greater audience? It's kind of a two-parter, like one that you felt sad that, you know, it didn't make it, but two, I'm also curious, like, have you ever written something that didn't make it that you're like, I'll use that little gem somewhere else because I love it so much. I'm going to, you know, see where it takes me.
I wrote a book called The Someone New, which is about a chipmunk who's scared of new things and then meets a new snail. You never feel weirder than when you're describing the plot of a children's book to two adults.
It's pretty trippy shit.
And then there's a second book coming out this June about voting. But for some reason, I really wanted that book to be about, like, fake news and, like, fact checking. And so I wrote that book first. And, you know, it was the story of a butterfly who I'm trying to think what the fake news was that she got. I think it was like that, like, bees cause thunderstorms or something. And everybody was
everything.
Everybody was like, that doesn't sound right. And then she went to the web, which was a spider web.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is that at present, my publisher does not need this book on fact checking, and I was devastated because I love it so much. But I know that it will come out some way or somehow.
Yes.
Be it, I don't know what, a play I write, be it something. And I feel really sure that, like, they made the right decision for what they need and what, you know, what might have been the better children's book. But also, I feel really sure that, like, this is going to be a something someday.
The world needs it.
While we're on the subject, we would love for you to talk to us more about your process for writing your children's books.
Yeah.
I mean, it started here, but now you have taken this gift for writing children's books and just continued to run with it, which I think is so wonderful. But Marlon Bundo, The Someone New, and coming soon, Everyone Gets a Say, which is about voting,
which is about
right?
voting.
Will you talk to us a little bit about your process for writing these books?
Sure. Writing Marlon Bundo was, I hate to say this, it was honestly the easiest thing I ever did because I did not in any way believe it was real or going to happen. And so I didn't.
There's another good trick.
Yeah. I didn't have a second of, like, wondering if it was. Actually, what happened was I met, they were like, sure, write a book. And we had a quick meeting just about whether we wanted it to be a book that was actually for adults, but that looked like a children's book, or whether we wanted a real children's book. And we said, you know what, like, let's give a shot to a real children's book. They didn't assign me anything. I went back to my office and I just went, like, you know what, I should just write them something because then it will be a lot easier for them to be like, oh, now that I see it, not that, this.
Yes.
It's just a lot of times giving someone
something to work with.
Something clarifies what they want.
That's
So I went and I just spent like an hour and a half and I was like, I wrote a book, and then I gave it to them. And they came back the next day and they were like, great, we're going to publish that book. And I was
Wait a second.
I mean, like, a lot more happened, but not a lot of editing, oddly enough. Maybe there was 10 words that changed.
Number one, New York Times bestseller. First draft written in 90 minutes.
And nothing has ever been like that since. If you're a children's book author, do not worry. I have agonized over every other thing. As soon as it became real, I am suddenly, all I do.
That is so interesting.
Is think up like good names for characters in books, because that's the part that's really fun
you
for me.
You are great at naming characters. Yes. You're great at naming dogs. You're great at naming pudding. Yes. That is a great name for anything.
Oh my gosh. No, that's my favorite thing. But the rest of it is just... I don't know. And I don't have kids. Everything's a guess. I can't, as I read, like, I read like 20 children's books and I was like, I could not tell you which of these are good and which are not good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is like a whole new world for me. So
but I love one takeaway is sometimes it's easy and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it took me a long time to learn that because I think somewhere as a kid, I got sort of globbed onto this idea of like, you know, everything worth doing, everything, it's hard, you know, and it's, that's what makes it worth it. And so things that came easy to me, I sort of discounted as options.
Right.
I'm like, oh, well, that, I don't know, that doesn't feel very hard. And then it was just like college professor after college professor of like, you know, it doesn't actually have to be hard. It is okay if this comes to you.
And sometimes things of quality take time. Sometimes it takes 7 years to write Hamilton or what have you. Both things can be true. And sometimes it takes 30 minutes to write Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Like, that's right. That's right.
And also, I think it did, in a way, take me years to write Marlon Bundo. It just was, you know, I have had a Google Doc on my computer certainly for the last 7 or 8 years called Good Names for Animals. I don't have any pets. I have never had to name an animal. I don't know why I had that, but as soon as that opportunity came up, I was like, well, great. I'm just going to open Good Names for Animals Google Doc that I have had my whole life.
Here's a follow-up question. What are some other good names for animals, Jill?
I really desperately want someone to have a tiny kitten named Hiccup.
Oh my
god.
That's
such a good name.
That's cute.
Fantastic.
I went to the like meet the breeds thing where you got to go like meet a whole bunch of dogs and then I renamed them all, and I think my favorite one was, well, that was not her real name. I named her this. I don't even know who this dog is, but I named her Miss Agatha Dipsy Noodle.
Dipsy Noodle is a really fun thing to say.
She sounds like Dipsy a good noodle. Dog.
She was a pretty good dog.
We also have Dipsy a list of potential. Ours is more specific. It's potential dog names. And one of my favorites on that list, I really have enjoyed naming our dogs. As you know, listeners, my dogs are named Kitty Bunny and POTUS.
So good.
And I think our... I really, POTUS is little. He was like, when we got him, he was like 5 pounds. And I was really fighting for Cujo.
Pretty cute,
but I
too.
But I think Jetpack is also a great name for a dog.
Oh that's Jetpack. Really good.
Is there another dog in your future?
But I don't know. Hiccup is
Hiccup's pretty damn cute.
She's the perfect little kitten. Also, one of our other writers, Julie, has a cat named Pajama. she calls her Jammy.
Jammy.
It could not be better.
I need
little baby
Jammy.
Jam Jams.
Yeah, so good.
That's a fantastic name. Good job, Julie.
You seem to have a particular skill in turning things that like make you mad or have the potential for like honestly to spin the rest of us out into rage for the rest of the day or a week. You have a skill in turning that into something that we can either laugh at or a children's book that we can learn from. Talk to us about
that. How'd you do that magic trick?
Help the rest of us.
Well, thank you for saying that. I guess I'll just talk about the someone new, since that was a specific process where I had written Marlon Bundo and suddenly I had an opportunity to write a children's book, which was not something I had ever intended to do.
Yeah.
In retrospect, like, I love reading kids' books. I still like the Ramona Quimby books. I love so much all the time. I have, outside of your question, I have this theory that every book I truly love is actually a Ramona Quimby book at a different age. Like, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Is definitely adult Ramona Quimby.
You're totally right.
Ramona Quimby, age 42.
Oh my God.
That has nothing to do with anything you just asked, but that's my new theory.
Outside of that, I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but my brilliant teacher, Linda Berry, has a theory that things like People Magazine and Us Magazine are paper dollies for grown-ups. Oh. So if the cover is like Brad and Jennifer together again, Angelina and Brad, Splitsville, it's all just like a grown-up version of like,
plain
I love
paper
you.
Dolls.
I love you. Oh, I hate you. Making them kiss, pulling them apart, making them fight is all like paper dollies, but for grown-ups. Sorry to interrupt.
That is fascinating.
You were answering this question.
Wow.
Yes. So I had a chance to write a children's book, and it happened to be right around the time I think that we all learned that that the government was separating children from their parents. Oof. At the border.
Yeah.
It was devastating. It made me sick. It was like in my head. I was thinking about it all the time. And I guess when I feel helpless, there's a couple things that I go to, but one of them is definitely writing a thing. And I felt like, I feel very frustrated with grownups right now. And I know it's not universally true, but it really feels like no one's changing their mind. No one wants to genuinely learn anything. I know that's not true. Just feels like that.
Right.
But like kids will still learn stuff.
Yes.
And so it felt like, hey, maybe this will do something. Maybe this will. And it was sort of that. It was that I want kids to learn to be kind to someone new. That was all it was. And that was partially the immigration thing, the horrible stuff that was going on. It was also partially because I was the new kid.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that until after I wrote it. But I was like, Jill, I think you just wrote this book so that people would have been nice to you when you were a kid, when you went to a new school.
But 11 out of 12 years.
Yeah. They if they had the book, life would have been a lot better. But I think it just came down to that. I had another moment with the someone new. The night I remember, like, just some nights are real bad. And there was a night when like crowds were chanting, send her back, about a woman in Congress who is, of course, a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
And it was horrible. And I was sick and I just didn't know what to do. And so I went on Twitter and I said, I want to give away 5 of these books.
Yes.
I was like, I know this is nothing, but I want to do something. And then someone messaged me and she's like, I want to be anonymous, but can I send you money? I want you to give away 10 books. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Oh. I'll change it to 10 books. And then by the time I had typed that, someone else had messaged me. And I was getting messages. It got to the point where it was like 60 books that people had donated, and I had to go stop it. I don't know how to mail more than 60 books. I'm sorry. I did not plan for this. I woke up the next day and my publisher called me and they were like, we saw what you did. We're gonna donate all those books. And so all the money can go to, it ended up going, I think, to Races, a charity for immigrants. And it was just, it was like, well, I just did all I could think of.
Yeah.
And that's what writing the books is, but that's also what like that was that night. And, you know, if it had just been giving away 5 books, that also would have been fine.
Yeah.
But I think we're all looking for that right now.
When you said, and then I started receiving responses from people who said, can I please, it reminds me of the conversation we were having recently. Was it with Donna Lieberman at the NYCLU, where many of us are looking for that thing that we can throw our particular gifts into to feel as if we are moving the needle in some way, that we're fighting for the powers of good and making a difference in that way. So I am not surprised that other people saw you take a stand on Twitter and were like, can I direct some energy in that direction as well?
Yeah.
I love that.
And I feel like kids give me hope. And so there is something. I don't actually like them very much.
I'm with you. But you're hopeful you might someday like them.
Yeah, I think if you said to them, you know, you should be nice to someone new. And I think it's a real thing for kids. It's real scary to go like, I just got this place figured out. You know, I just figured out who I eat lunch with. I just like figured out like who's nice to me and who's not. And now like there's a new thing in here. But they're willing to like give it a shot, or like, hey, just got my life figured out, and now I'm about to have like a new little brother.
Yes,
like, how's that gonna work out?
Who's this now?
Right, and it's something I think kids are very open to and willing to learn, and it's like a much bigger life skill than we give it credit for being.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up just on one thing that you said. Somewhere in there, I think you said these words. I might be wrong, but when you feel something or something makes you angry, you just, you're instinctively, you go to write. You just go to the page, right? Do you know, do you have a thought at like what it's going to be when you do that? Or you're just like, I'm just going to write something. I'm just going to respond to this in the way that I know how, and that is writing.
I think mostly I don't know what it's going to be. I think that I'm a big idea person and not always the best follow through person. And so for everything I've told you, there's been like 64 billion ideas.
Sure. Just make sure of all those ideas during Quills really gets its day.
During
Go ahead.
I mean, we are seven songs in, so it has to go somewhere. If there is not a song from Grace talking about how Mr. Warbucks likes to be called daddy, why is there even music in the world?
That musical is very rich with during Quill possibilities.
I think they all are. Now that I thought we'd like invented this great concept, and then I realized I think Wicked is a during Quill. Like, I think in reality we did not come up with this at all.
I think you have a point.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, but whatever.
But I just really loved what you said, because you're talking about using your art, your particular art form, as a way to, like, a coping mechanism for what's happening in the world and the things that trouble us.
And it begins with, like, ordering your thoughts. When you sit down to write and you're not exactly sure how it's going to come out, it seems like you're...
Right.
Yeah.
But for someone else, it might be like, I'm just going to take to the dance studio. I'm just going to go and I'm going to move
it out
in a way, or I'm just going to paint and I don't know what that is. And I don't have to know what it is.
Right. Or I'm going to write a protest song.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm inspired by that.
Me too. When we interviewed our friend, do you know Matt Vogel? Matt Vogel's probably come and done stuff on your show. He plays, in addition to Kermit the Frog and Big Bird, he plays several other characters. And he's really at the top of Muppet Mountain.
Yeah, and he's been there for a long time.
Yeah,
like, he's a very, very long
time.
Made
his way up. Yeah. But he gave us, when we were talking with him, he gave us some great creative advice. And that is, always be making something that is just yours. Mm-hmm. What are you making? You contribute to this great work that we love so much, but what are you making that is just yours in addition to the during Quills?
I think the thing that is the most mine and is the most me is the play I'm writing.
Yes.
Tell us more.
Tell us.
It is...
I can't wait for this one, honestly.
It is about the Seneca Falls Convention, which it's a comedy about the Seneca Falls Convention, naturally, which was the convention in 1848 where women first asked for the right to vote. Where that was first spoken aloud to everyone's knowledge. And it was scandalous. Mm-hmm. It really was. But in so many of the ways, like, so many of the fights they were fighting are the fights we're still fighting. Amelia Bloomer and her pants. Like, how much have we fought about Hillary pantsuits? Like, that was not. There's just so much.
It's 100 years later, and here we are where we were.
Yeah, I ended up, weirdly, when you talk about, like, where ideas come from, somebody came to me and was like, have you ever wanted to write for the theater? And I said, yeah, I've always wanted that. And they were like, what do you want to write about? And I literally just said the Seneca Falls Convention, which I knew almost nothing about. Why would I say that? I have no idea. But then I, like, went home and I read about it. And the first thing I read was there was a woman there, Martha Coffin Wright, who was 41 and pregnant and read a humor piece. And I was like, these are my ladies. I love them. They are, like, the weirdos of their time. And I think, like, it, as I've written it, it's become important to me, first of all, to deal with a lot of the women's issues in it, but also to sort of realize, like, how we judge history. And one of the things that I wrote in it that I didn't, not to, like, brag about my own sentence, but it was, like, I wrote it, and then I was like, whoa, I think I just wrote a true thing, which
I love that.
Was... your wild liberal ideas are just some other generation's baseline for decency. And now I think oh, maybe that's what I'm writing about.
Wow.
Maybe that's what it is. It's like, what's the thing that I am not doing right now that is gonna make me just humiliating to somebody 100 years from now? Like, I can't even guess what that thing is.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. These were, like, super liberal
people. I think
people.
It's something, we talk about this at home. I think it's something about the environment. I'm pretty sure it's something about plastics in the environment. among mm-hmm. other things.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
There's far too many things right now.
So when we first talked about, I don't know if you remember this, but we talked about this some years back. And I feel like, if I'm remembering correctly, your first conception of this was that it might be a musical.
Yes.
But that has shifted.
It has not. Well, I think I wanted it to be a musical because I love musicals the most.
Sure.
and I have sort of a bias against plays. Which I shouldn't. I just do. Where
I'd
I'm like
to hear
I just,
more about that.
I think a lot of it is that I want a lot of things to be happening to like keep my attention.
Yes.
I don't tend to like movies very much. I love to read books because I am personally involved.
Yeah.
And yep. in musicals, it's like, well, if you get bored by the acting, then there will be an orchestra, and then right. there will be the
somebody's
dancing.
Getting shot out of a cannon.
Right.
yeah.
But musicals also take so long.
Yes.
We went through and met with like amazing composers, but maybe never like the perfect one for this. And slowly I realized I'd written so much stand-up comedy into it that would all probably have to be cut if it was a musical. You can't have a scene and then stand-up comedy about the themes of the scene and then a song about
a song
like
about
you're obviously
the
sounds like a variety show
the stand-up and a person that had read all my stuff and was looking at it was like, that's what I love about what you wrote. And also, it's 2020, which is the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote. So it feels like this is the year this play has to be done and get like into a reading or something like that. And that just can't happen as a musical.
Right. Right.
Do you have plans? Do you have specific plans about where people might
we
be
gotta,
able to
we got to get moving on
we
this.
We need to get moving on this.
I know. It's like, I'm like,
can we help
60
you?
Pages
what
in,
can we do?
I got to write like 20 more pages.
Here's two of the nine character women. We'll read it for
oh
you.
Oh, my gosh.
We are like, let us help. We want to see this make it
so
to
here's
the
stage thing.
This year.
Can I just spitball?
Yeah.
So, Celia, I was just talking to Cams about this. Yeah. Celia Keenan-Bolger and I used to do this thing called Play Club, where we would just get into her living room and bring together some of Broadway's finest, frankly, and we would just read plays that we liked. So
just read
we
a play.
We read what was
I love this.
Like the 5th of yeah. July. Just like we would just get together for the pleasure of reading plays, and then we would chat about it, and we would have snacks.
Let's
that was,
set a
that
date and read your play.
Why don't we read your play?
Like that'll give you a deadline,
right?
I mean, no pressure. You're just like
I would
being
love
recorded
to
saying
have
this, but
snacks and reading my play.
Do you want to do that?
Right?
I do want to do that.
Okay.
Let's. I mean it completely sincerely.
Genuinely.
This is not just for the benefit of the listeners who could give a shit. Like, I mean this completely sincerely. Do you want to do it?
I do want to do it.
You know
it.
What? We'll finish up the logistics off mic, but
that's right.
I say like we decide.
We're doing it.
We decide. You decide what you want. How much you want it to be finished or not finished, and we decide a date-ish that might work with all of our schedules, and we just read this play.
And we find the funniest ladies,
yeah.
the funniest yes. character ladies that we know. There yes. is one ingenue in the whole play, and
that
everyone
can be Celia.
Else is 35 and older.
Celia can be the ingenue because she's
yes.
great at playing young people, but she's got that good brain, and then we'll put together, not. Do you need any
yeah.
men?
Yes, there are three men.
Great.
Three okay. men, nine women.
Easy
okay.
peasy.
Fabulous.
This is going to be great.
I'm so excited. All right. You've been making stuff for a long time. Do you have any creative advice that you'd like to pass on to us and to our listening audience?
Sure. I think for the purpose of if you want to make this something you do as a job, which is you might not want that, in which case, go crazy. I think you need to make things. And then I think you need to put them in a place where people can see them. I honestly think that is every piece
this
of advice
is,
I have.
This is for every
yeah.
creative, not
that's
just
right.
somebody who wants to be a comedy writer.
That's right.
This is like for if you're a painter, if you're
yeah.
a dancer.
Things
if
and
you
put them
want,
out there.
If you want people to see. I mean, there are yeah. people that might
if you want it to be
themselves.
A job.
Yes,
that's right.
But if you want it to be a job.
Make things.
Put it
and
out
then
there.
Put them out there where people can see it.
Put it out. Like find a way to. I know a lot of people that write jokes and then they write jokes and then no one hires them because how would you know what
right.
they do? And so whatever the thing
mm-hmm.
is that you do,
mm-hmm.
do you need to make sketches and put them on YouTube? Do you need to do? I needed to do stand up to
right.
learn what audiences laugh at and how to write jokes and whatever. And that was a way that I made a group of friends that eventually, you know, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is that you need to do, you can't do it unless you put some stuff out there for people.
That's
to,
right.
I love that.
You
it's a simple
it
two-parter.
There.
Number one, make things.
Things.
Number two,
Just put it out there.
People can see it. Oh, that's good advice.
That's great.
Is there anything creative you know that you need to do before you're done?
No, I think this play is as close to that anything. Great. I don't have a lot hanging over my head that I just don't get. I get to like fight a lot of my fights through the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can pitch things like that.
Yeah.
I do want to get more into writing lyrics. That is something I want to make yes. sure mm-hmm. that I'm doing because I love it very much. And so whatever that turns into, I'm thinking about like turning someone new into a mm-hmm. musical or something like that. Mm-hmm. All goes full circle because woo. I'll make them rap like Ready, Aim, Recycle. I absolutely will not. I will write zero rap. I promise.
Zero rapping
that
will happen.
That is my guarantee to you. I will not be writing rap.
Really feels to me like the grass doesn't grow under your feet, right? You're always moving. You're always working. You're always doing more, which is exciting.
I feel like an incredibly lazy person, and I think I am. I do. I genuinely, I'm not. But I don't spend a lot of time like worrying about doing things, I guess, is the one thing that I think saves me some time.
Yeah. Well, just there's a lot of evidence just to say that you are doing things. Can you tell us for you, what's it all for?
I think that I am at heart, like astoundingly optimistic about what it can do. And I think mm-hmm. every time I'm not good at just writing something that's just silly or just I wish I were, because I love those kinds of books. But I think every time it starts out with like, what do I want to change about the world? That's I think every single thing that I write, except probably the Annie Darton Cole, which is maybe why it's so weird for me.
You need some life balance.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that's usually what it is, great. Is because I think like maybe if they read this book, suddenly the world will fix.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's beautiful.
Finally, who or what is sparking you these days?
I have been reading, I'm trying to think, I believe the book is called The World Only Spins Forward, yes. which is about the writing of Angels in America, yes. Which wow. at first I found really intimidating. Weirdly, I was doing it because I'm writing a comedy. In my head, I was like, what's the funniest play I know? And for some reason, I was like, I think Angels in America truly is funnier than most like really funny plays. Most like strictly comedy plays, yeah. I guess, is a way to like, I would yeah. laugh more at the jokes in Angels in America than maybe Noises Off or whatever.
Yes,
right.
For me. So I was like, great, I'll look at that. And at first it was very intimidating because Tony Kushner, and you always mm-hmm. hear sort of the story that makes it sound like Tony Kushner just like birthed this like right. perfect thing. And then you read this book and you're like, they had like 30 readings of this.
Yeah.
And they rewrote everything. And they like didn't, you know, and it makes you go like, oh, even the things that seem like perfect and like birthed out like beautifully were like mm-hmm. agonizing to yep. get through and went through so many changes. And that maybe he had perfect confidence that it would be good, but certainly like parts of the book imply that like a lot of people did not know, and they questioned, rightfully, 2 3.5 hour long plays.
That's right.
Say the title of the book again.
I believe it is The World Always Spins Forward.
Jill Twiss. Thank you so much.
I didn't mean to talk at the same time.
Thank you so much for having me.
What if we did the whole outro in unison? That'd be fantastic. You're a treat.
You are a delight.
A pleasure. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm such a huge fan.
Settle down. Settle down, everybody. Ditto. That's it. Listen, we hope that this all put another bunch of sparks in your file. Hey, listen to me. If there's a spark you'd like us to explore, or if you've taken a spark and you've fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share that, won't you email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or submit it through our website, thesparkfile.com.
We will even take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you have to share some creative risk that you've taken recently.
Mm-hmm. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, 5-star, review it. If you like this podcast, you know what would make a big difference? Share it with people that you love. And if you didn't like it, I don't know. Jill, what do you say to your critics?
Go fuck yourself.
Yes. That's my girl. That's my girl.
Go fuck yourself. But if something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we are writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You gotta reminisce it. You gotta piano gliss it. You gotta get sparked by politics. Then totally Jill Twiss it.
You gotta take it
and make it.
Bye.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark files. Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark files. I jump into my spark files. Let's open up the spark files.